Hello and welcome to the AAMFT podcast, your all-access pass to the latest news, developments, and thought leaders in the world of systemic therapy, where we strive to relate, educate, and innovate one episode at a time. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Karam, and we're brought to you by the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. In addition to featuring unique conversation and interviews with established experts, our show provides information and education on direct practice and emerging trends in the MFT profession. For more information, please visit us at aamft.org. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Step inside, take a seat, let's explore the world of therapy like never before. Dr. Eli's here, bringing voices so bright, innovating, relating, and shedding new light. It's AAMFT, where wisdom meets passion. Come listen and see, talking trends, deep insights, and stories so bold. For MFT minds, the future unfolds. Systemic, my friends, we relate, educate, and innovate again. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. We relate, educate, and innovate again, one episode at a time. At a time.
The medical model is the dominant model in the diagnostic practice of mental health. This model mainly assumes that mental health disorders occur within an individual. As such, the diagnostic process for mental disorders is focused on identifying symptoms, providing a working diagnosis, and applying usually individual-focused treatment. The treatment is unsuccessful, then new information needs to be gathered to provide a better, more accurate diagnosis and hopefully get better treatment outcomes. This is the model that's most widely used and currently the only one that receives third-party reimbursement from insurance companies. And we see that in the current iterations of the DSM, currently the DSM-5, TR, and it's rooted in the biomedical model. But in a world driven by this model, MFTs must incorporate theory-driven assessment and diagnosis into their practice, demonstrating how we diagnose systems, not just individuals. And in this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be joined with a fellow passionate systemic thinker, Dr. Jacob Priest, and he's going to argue that theory and diagnosis are the keys to providing excellent care in family therapy. And he's going to present a model that diagnoses the history, structure, and boundaries of a family system. And as listeners, you're going to be introduced to his epic assessment that takes those things into consideration and guides us in our practice. Jacob is going to talk about how in family therapy, we often conflate theory, diagnosis, and intervention, which narrows our ability to practice effectively. Because when we collapse theory, diagnosis, and intervention together, we end up doing none of them well. So to advance as a field and to build better diagnosis and intervention models, Jacob says we need to be clear about the purpose and role of theory, diagnosis, and intervention. And systemic diagnosis is the key to systemic intervention. So if we don't diagnose the history, the structure, boundary of the systems, it's likely that our interventions are going to fall flat because they're going to neglect one of those components. And if an intervention model does not include tools to address each aspect of the system, it shouldn't be considered a systemic intervention. Jacob Priest is an associate professor, and he is the director of the Couple and Family Therapy Program in the College of Education at the University of Iowa. He also holds a secondary appointment, as we'll talk about today, in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. Jacob received his BS in Family Studies from Weber State University and MS in MFT from Purdue University Calumet and his PhD in MFT from Florida State. This was a spirited conversation, and I hope you will find it that way too. We will be back after my interview with Jacob. Jacob Priest, welcome to the AAMFT podcast.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, today we're going to talk all about systemic assessment. How can we as pure MFTs exist in a world that prioritizes diagnosis, and sometimes that is revolving around pathology or deficit, while also doing what we believe in a long storied history of MFT of looking for strength and health and seeing things as recursive instead of linear. So we're going to talk all about that today, but you listened to the show before. We got to know about you first. So talk to us about your MFT origin story and specifically what led you to not just thinking systemically, but writing a book all about systemic diagnosis that we'll talk about today.
Yeah, when I think about my MFT origin story, I actually recorded a little bit in the book, at least one that is especially relevant to what we'll be talking about today. So I did my master's degree at Purdue University Calumet, which is now, I think, Purdue North Central, but
Purdue Northwest, I think.
Northwest?
Okay. Yes, I think it's Northwest. You and I have that in common too, because I was getting my PhD at Purdue to work on approved supervisor status, I would go once a week. I would drive to Hammond or Calumet,
yep.
But I was there supervising those people in 06, 07, and I bet you were already at Florida State by that time, were you?
Actually, I would have just left to go to Florida State.
We just missed each other there, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was probably in the first year I was there, I think it was our diagnosis class that we had, but we got Florence Kaslow's edited book, Relational Diagnosis. And I was super excited to read this book. I was like, yes, this is what I've been looking for. It's going to really help me understand what's going on with family couples I'm working with to really, really make a difference and set the stage so I know what I can do. And unfortunately, it ended up being the exact opposite, right? I got the book and there was a lot of good information in there. In fact, my advisor at Florida State, Wayne Denton, actually has a great chapter in there. And I give him a little bit of a hard time because he has this chapter where he's talking about the importance of theory. And then in the very next paragraph, he totally changes it around and moves away from theory. And, you know, Wayne has a MD and a PhD and really moves into more of the medical model of diagnosis. And that's what I found Kaslow's book to be. I think it's really important because being able to get reimbursed, being able to have these relationship issues viewed as important as other issues that might be in the DSM-5, I think is, and we can talk more about that, but it didn't provide me with the ability to make sense of systems, of families, of couples in the way I wanted to. So with that, I continued my work at Florida State, where I worked more closely with Wayne and his ability to diagnose. And still, it's that medical model. And for me, it fully came to a head when I started, this is a decade ago, here at the University of Iowa in our PhD program here. And I was supervising students, our PhD students, for the first time. And I remember we were sitting there and somebody was presenting about a family or a couple, I don't remember exactly. And I asked, I was like, okay, so let's talk about diagnosis. And everybody in the room looked shocked. It's like, what? And they said, as CFTs, we don't believe in diagnosis. And I said, wait, what? Yeah, diagnosis is antithetical to what we believe as MFTs, what you were saying, right? Like this idea that pathology, this medical model of diagnosis that's really found in the DSM, is antithetical to everything we do. And it was in that moment that really it clicked for me. And an idea that I've been thrown around, which then resulted in this book, is really, I don't think we teach what diagnosis is very well. And because of that, we miss out on an opportunity to really have a more effective practice, I would argue.
Yeah, I agree completely. For our listeners, let's start out by defining what we mean by systemic diagnosis.
Yeah. Okay. So to do that, I always have to share a little bit about one of the issues I have sometimes with our writing in the world of CFT, MFT. If you look at most textbooks we're training students in, there's always a section called Theories of Family Therapy. And when you go to that, it's actually models of intervention, right? They'll talk a little bit about the background, where it's based on, but it's really a model of intervention. And to me, what that does is it collapses the three important things we should be doing, learning, applying as family therapists, right? We collapse theory, diagnosis, and intervention. Those three are all related, but they're very different. In my mind, theory is about predicting and explaining something. If we're talking about family systems theory, which I would, where systemic diagnosis comes from, right? It's about predicting and explaining close relationships. And that's very different than an intervention model. An intervention model's job isn't necessarily to predict and explain, but it's to be able to adapt, adjust, change the system in a way that it can be more flexible, be able to reach its goals, all of those types of things. But in the middle of that, we have to have a bridge, something that connects theory and intervention. And to me, that's what diagnosis is, right? Diagnosis is just the application of our theory to the couple family system that's in front of us, right? That's what, if you look at diagnosis in the DSM, that's what they're doing, right? They're not explicit that their theory is the biomedical model, and that their mental health issues are a result of things that happen inside of us. But that's what it's rooted in. And so it's basically saying, okay, because here is our theory that predicts and explains mental health issues, what have you, then here's the diagnosis that is going to apply this theory to the present context. And then after we have that diagnosis, it's going to result in here's our course of treatment, right? And I think a lot of times in family therapy, we just go through all of those and see them as not really separate. But I think that there's a lot of value and the ability to diagnose well when we differentiate between theory, diagnosis, and intervention. So to me, that is what diagnosis is. Diagnosis is the application or the distillation of theory to the context we're working with.
People automatically, when you say diagnosis, they think DSM. And
yep.
I'm curious here, you know, when I'm working with my students to start developing their kind of systemic thinking and conceptualizing a case. So how do you think diagnosis relates to case conceptualization? Or as we say in my common factors world, every couple or family, every system has a cycle, and you have to understand that. So to me, diagnosis, it goes hand in hand with how you conceptualize a system, a case that you are working with. But I'm curious how you think diagnosis and case conceptualization work together.
Yeah. So I actually write a little bit about this in the book. And if you go through what I think are at least the books written about or the articles published about case conceptualization, to me, it's really a lot of time, and this isn't always, but I think a lot of the time it's backwards. And what I mean by that is they're actually starting with the intervention and then applying that intervention to say, okay, these are the things that I think will work with this couple, with this family. So if you were going to take structural family therapy, instead of starting with, okay, what is the structure of the system? It's okay, how could I use an enactment or something to shift this family? And that's what I've seen a lot of times, that maybe not in theory, to use that word, how case conceptualization works, but often in practice, right? If you look at most of the writing, which I did, I was only like, am I really doing something different? And to me, it spoke that, yeah, actually I was. Case conceptualization tends to be more intervention driven. And I think that's problematic because then it gives rise to post hoc explanations of things, right? If you want to say, why did this work? If you're talking about a case afterward and you started with intervention, then your only way to explain that is by saying the model works. And when we focus just on a model, we actually create less opportunities, right? Theory and diagnosis give us the ability to be flexible. So in my mind, how I see it different is diagnosis is theory-driven. Case conceptualization is model-driven. Now, there can be benefits to both, but I think that diagnosis, and again, I'm totally reclaiming that word because I think it's important for us as family therapists, right, is really about, instead of saying, what can I do? This is what I think the problem is. What can I do? It's basically about describing what's going on in the system now and in its history. And that, to me, is different than case conceptualization.
What do you think historically, and then you can talk about your specific experience, because I think at Iowa, you're in a medical setting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not in a traditional family studies or MFT.
So we had a CFT PhD program for 10 years, and we are in the process. This is our last year. We're shutting it down. So mostly my job now is in the Department of Internal Medicine.
Yeah.
What challenges do you think MFTs have faced in trying to remain systemic in their assessments and diagnoses while existing in a mental health landscape that prioritizes this individual-focused, pathology-based diagnosis and treatment planning? Because you were like a systemic thinker in an environment maybe where you were a minority, a vocal minority, but still a minority. Personally, how do you think the field has dealt with that? And then in your own setting that you're in now?
Yeah, so I think, and I know I gave the Kaslow book at the beginning a little bit of shot down, and I don't want to do that. I think relational diagnosis, as has been talked about, not only by Kaslow and her colleagues back in the 90s, early 2000s, but also more recently in Family Process, like they had a whole issue on relational diagnosis, an idea whose time has come, right? We have great evidence out there that our closest relationships impact every aspect of our lives, our health, our mental health, anything you want to do that, right? And so being able to not have to diagnose instead of an adjustment disorder, if I can have parent-child relationship disorder, right? That is something that I think can add meaning because we know the impact that can have on people's lives. What I think, though, is where that gets misguided is that becomes more of a replication of, okay, let's just take the medical model and adapt it to two people. And so with that context, why I think systemic diagnosis is important, and actually, in my experience, instead of getting pushback, has been valued in a medical setting, is because it offers a new avenue. My main responsibility in the internal medicine department is overseeing a weight management and diabetes psychotherapy clinic and an LGBTQ clinic. And in the weight management clinic, we have people who are really stuck. And they get told by their doctor, their dietitian, the nurses, that you should just lose weight. And they know that, right? And one of the things that I love that we do with the providers where I work with is they come shadow me, they talk to our students, they work with our students, and they'll always ask these questions. Do you just talk about diet and exercise? And I say, no, that's the last thing we talk about. Most of these patients know that already. But if we think systemically, if we can think about, okay, what are the patterns of interaction that serve to maintain this, what they see as this issue or problem, it gives us a lot more options and opportunities. And I've found that the doctors, the nurse practitioners, the physician assistants are super open to that, right? Because in many ways, they are working with patients with chronic health issues and they get stuck too. They say, what can we do now? Like, let's just send them to Jacob and hopefully that'll get it fixed. But I think that's where the value is. If we can learn, and again, that's why I was intentional about choosing the word diagnosis. If we can, in some ways, meet these providers where they're at, we give them then the opportunity to welcome them into this world where there's more possibilities and more opportunities. But oftentimes, when we say, oh, diagnosis is bad and we shouldn't interact with the medical model, and I'm not saying that's the majority of family therapists, but I think there is some that would just say that the whole idea of diagnosis is problematic. But if we can meet them where they're at, we actually then have a bridge of language that allows us to communicate in a way that can not only facilitate better conversations between therapists and doctors, but better care for patients.
All right, give us this story. I like what you're saying of how you are collaborating with these stakeholders and proponents of the medical model to teach a new way of thinking or a language that works for both parties. Because that's really, I think, where we're headed as a field to MFT, as my mentor, the late great Doug Sprinkle, would always say, has this tendency of throwing out the baby with the bathwater and taking these extreme positions that really hurt the field. So obviously, a systemic relational diagnosis can honor both worlds if done well, I think. But I'm curious what your dialogue educating these medical professionals looks like, if you have any good stories about that.
Yeah, so I just did a grand rounds, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago? So I was there with most of the providers and fellows, a lot of them in internal medicine. They wanted me to talk about basically, because for the most part, I don't think most doctors or providers have a clue what therapists do. Like, what do you do? People seem to like working with you and your students. What are you actually doing when you do this? And so the conversation I had with them is I walked them through what is a pattern I see with the patients I work with, right? Most of the patients I work with come to me and say, okay, yeah, I've got to lose weight. I've done it before. I've lost this much weight before. And then it came back on. What am I doing? And, you know, I can say to them, you know this, doctors, if I jump into this view of their world, if I look at them as they are saying, this is the problem, I've got to do this, I'm just going to replicate what they've already received. And they don't need that. My expertise is not in the endocrine system. My expertise is not in diet, what you should be eating, but my expertise is seeing the system. And so what I did is talk to the doctors, the providers about, okay, what do we mean when we mean system, right? It's a word we use all the time, but, you know, even my grad students who are getting PhDs in family therapy, if I ask them what is a system, they have a hard time defining it.
It means different things to different people, and as does what it means to think systemically. So you're right. Sometimes people just say, I'm a systems thinker. You got to ask another question. Well, what does that mean to you?
Exactly, right? And I'm so glad you brought that up. Actually, I have arguments with people all the time. And so I actually say, yeah, if we are going to go back to where I think family systems theory is rooted, which is Ludwig von Berlanti's general systems theory, he has a pretty clear definition of what a system is. He says a system is elements, interaction, and purpose, right? That the elements are in a system if they have distinct or unique interactions. And these interactions are what give rise to the system's purpose. Especially in human systems, they can tell us what they say the purpose of the system is, but that often is just a story or narrative that tries to maintain the current interactions that are actually giving rise to the system's purpose. So that's what I give the doctors first, is this is what a system is. And if we then know what a system is, we then know how to diagnose that system. And if we're diagnosing a system, this is what Jay Haley talked about in problem-solving therapy. If we diagnose the system, it actually gives us a lot more options and opportunities to intervene. If we're diagnosing an individual, it limits our ability to respond. So to me, that's what I try to explain, is my goal isn't to try to get them to stay to a diet or exercise. Most of that, and we know from research, is not going to work anyway, right? For me, it's about understanding what are the factors that gave rise to the current interactions. Why is there an inability to adapt or be flexible in these interactions? And how can I use my thinking to help try to create that flexibility, to create that adaptability, so this person can be able to reach the goals that they want to.
All right, let's stay with the world that you're in now in obesity. So let's say, you know, you are working with a physician or even a therapist in training. How are you modeling? How are you talking to the client? Because a lot of our listeners, they will be like, okay, how can I use what these guys are talking about in the session tonight? How can it help me think about my actual clinical work? So how would you use this with an actual client to frame to them your systemic diagnosis of what's going on.
So to me, and a lot of times, just given how we're set up here, I'm doing a lot of one-time sessions with folks, and then they get transferred to my graduate students. But what I try to teach them and what I wrote about in the book was really a process for doing that, right? If we think about a system, elements, interaction, and purpose, then we've got to have a process of getting that information to understand the system, right? If we know about the elements, interactions, and purpose, we can then understand the history, structures, and boundaries of the current system. And I'm going to define all those because it can, we use that word in a lot of different ways, right? But so for me, what I wrote about in the book is what I call the epic framework to be able to arrive at a systemic diagnosis, right? So epic, as you might think, stands for elements, purpose, interaction, and context. Elements is who's in the system, who are the people, and who are the relationships. Whenever I'm starting a conversation, my first thing is just to talk about who's important in their lives. They're talking about, yeah, I really struggle with disordered eating, and it's because I have a lot of stress. So instead of saying, okay, let's talk about how to really disrupt these thoughts about disordered eating, I say, okay, so tell me about what's going on in your life that's causing so much stress. And for a lot of these folks, it's they're taking care of sick parents, then they've got two young kids at home, and they're working full time, and they're and so the stress is very relational, right? And so that gives me now insights into who are the important elements in this system. And when I say elements, I'm not just talking about individuals, right? Individuals are elements within a system, but so are, if we want to call them subsystems, those are elements in and of themselves too, right? So every family system is built by the genetic system, but that's something we can't really assess for, but the individual, the attachment, and the triangulation system. Right. So my goal first is to find out, okay, where are these systems? Who are creating these attachments, these triangles in this system? And then, because there's hundreds of them, right? If you think about the complexity of a family, there could be a lot. So that's why it's actually in the EPIC assessment, the purpose comes next, right? We have to find where we have conflict or two systems or two elements having a conflicting or competing purpose. And once we do that, we can actually then hone in on those specific elements or subsystems and start to track the interactions that are happening. And as we track those interactions, and I think most MFTs, CFTs should be trained to be able to do that, we also have to understand the context. The interactions that are giving rise to the purpose in the system currently have adapted and evolved over time. And if we want to understand the current structure and boundaries of that system, then we have to understand the context in which these interactions arose. So it's about talking about not only the current environment, whether that be sociocultural, political, community, what have you, but also how that system has interacted within itself, with other members of that system, and with the environment over time. And once we have that information, it becomes relatively simple to talk about the system and to diagnose the system. It gives us this history, or in other words, the context in which the system has adapted across time. It gives us the structure, which is how the system interacts now, and the boundaries, or how the system interacts with its external environment. And when we have that information, it becomes really easy to then view the system and ways that you can intervene to get the system to have more flexibility, be more robust.
I love all of that, but you're preaching to the choir now. You're going to get people to say, okay, Jacob, it's hard to argue with elements, purpose, interaction, and context. Your helpful mnemonic on that, but I still need to get paid. And to get paid, I have to put a diagnosis from the DSM-5. So how can I hold both? How can I survive in a world dominated by the medical model and pathology and diagnosis? And it's the way many MFTs that have insurance-based practices, which is well over half, how they get paid. How can I reconcile that with wanting to have this really clear, multi-contextual, systemic relational diagnosis?
To me, I would argue that most of the time, if you're working with somebody, if they come into your office, they're probably experiencing symptoms that at least at some level arise to a clear diagnosis. I actually see these as, you know, a DSM diagnosis and a systemic diagnosis as serving two different purposes, right? If I diagnose someone with depression, which I've been trained to do, I can do, I know the symptoms of depression, and I see somebody's manifesting those symptoms, I can diagnose that. But as a systemic therapist, knowing that somebody has depression doesn't really guide my therapy, right? So even in using the EPIC framework, you're still going to get most of the information you need about that individual that would probably lead you to some sort of diagnosis. But at the same time, it may not actually provide you the platform to intervene effectively. So to me, what it then becomes is saying, okay, I can do this skill because I need it. And that's how our current system is set up. For good or for ill, that's what we're confronting. And I can do that. And I can also see how a systemic diagnosis can really help me not only treat the current symptoms that are there, but maybe the interactions that serve to generate and maintain those symptoms. So that's how I see it, right? I still provide diagnoses for folks, right? Because they meet criteria for that. But to me, it'd be more useful if I was prescribing medication because, oh, then I know that I've got these five or six medications that work for anxiety. So here's your Zoloft, right? It's an individualized diagnosis with an individualized response. But because I want a systemic diagnosis, I then have systemic options for intervening.
Yes, I love that. And I think that's the way as a field we need to move toward that. This is a diagnosis where it will lead to reimbursement and is individual in nature, but the real context of how whatever is afflicting you affects your whole network of your life and people is really the systemic relational diagnosis part. So I think you can't have one conversation without the other. And for many clients, I'm lucky enough to have a self-pay practice. Unless they want a diagnosis for reimbursement, I'm probably not going to go that way. I'm going to lean off of what you have articulated in your EPIC mnemonic again to explain and get the buy-in. I also think inherently, when you have a systemic diagnosis and you're focusing on the elements, all the players, the purpose, how it affects the interaction and what the context is, it gets the buy-in from multiple people if you're dealing with multiple people. And it takes us away from diagnosis having to be associated with pathology, which I think that is one of the things that in being in this profession for the last 24 years and training therapist and trying to resolve those two. How can I tap into strength and health, but not ignore psychopathology if it's staring me in the face, but then make it workable in a way that fits what I'm trying to do?
No, I think that's exactly how I see this playing out, right? In the book, I trace the history of the DSM, and most people right now are arguing that we might not ever see a version 6 of the DSM. Because if you look at the interrelator reliability of DSM diagnoses, it's not very great, right? And so that's why I think National Institute of Mental Health has moved into this RDOCS framework, which I think is also problematic. And that's a different topic too. But I think we're at this place where we're trying to, I think, especially more broadly, psychiatry, psychology is really wrestling with this idea of diagnosis. And I don't see that same wrestle being had as loudly among MFTs, CFTs, right? And I think we need to have it. And part of that is knowing how the other models work really well. If you want to diagnose systemically really well, you have to be able to diagnose on the DSM really well. I think the DSM is a little bit easier because it has a checklist of symptoms where, you know, a systemic diagnosis doesn't necessarily. But for me, that's what I see as the importance here is we, I think we're at a time point in mental health care where we can make an argument for why these things should be happening. And I just don't know if that argument is being made loud enough or clear enough in the family therapy world.
Yeah. And that leads into this next question. Both you and I are strong advocates for the profession. What do we need to do as a field to advance this? If we have this conversation 10 years from now, where do we need to be and what is the future of systemic diagnosis, do you hope?
Yeah. So going back to the original point, I think we need to really think about theory, diagnosis, intervention as separate. And the reason why is because then we don't teach our students or therapists to disregard diagnosis, right? If you walk into a medical setting or with psychiatrists and psychologists and say, hey, diagnosis is totally problematic and never really going to work, they're going to be like, okay, what is this person talking about? If you go in there and disrespect the great work that these psychiatrists, psychologists, other providers are doing, that's not going to help anything, right? But if you go in and say, yeah, I understand where you're coming from with this diagnosis. I see, because my theory is different, I can diagnose a little bit different way. So that's what I'd really like to see is MFT, CFTs becoming experts in theory and diagnosis just as much as we are in intervention. I think most MFTs intervene really well, right? There's unique opportunities. Our models are really creative and effective, but they don't spend the time really understanding theory, really understanding how to apply, distill theory as a diagnosis. And to me, that's what I think the future of the field needs to be is like, hey, we've got these really great ideas, and this is how they can help solve the problems that as a weight management or diabetes doctor really confront. And for me, that's what I see the future is us saying, hey, yeah, you've got your ideas about diagnosis, and so do we. And let's tell you how that can be beneficial, how we can help, how we can work together in our unique areas of expertise can really create and facilitate care that can have an impact on people's lives.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's interesting, back to your original point of when you ask people, maybe a therapist in training or a young MFT, like what's your, maybe a more experienced one that hasn't done some of the critical thinking that's been imbibed in our conversation this hour. If you ask them, what is their theory? They say, systems, as we say, generic, or sometimes they'll say family systems, or maybe they'll say attachment theory. Or if you ask them more, they'll start talking about model specific language, which, as you said at the beginning, is usually not theory. It's usually an intervention. I'm doing a blamer softening or a restructuring or whatever you think. And the challenge is also how we teach this. So the good thing, you are going to have an ability to affect change on a larger level. A former guest on the show and your friend and colleague, Becky Cobb, said that you all are writing a textbook. So I am wondering, just in the early phases of that, how would you frame this in a textbook? Because as you said, the way it is taught it has been part of the problem historically in these some of these great books that we've mentioned. But it sounds like you have a different idea of how to present it early on in the trainings.
Yeah, Joe and Lorna from Purdue Calumet, they've edited a textbook, an introduction to MFT textbook. They have two editions of it, and we are taking over that for them and going to do the third edition here in the next year. And Becky and I, because we're good friends, I've known Becky for a really long time. And so the fun thing about that is we can argue about these ideas in really fun ways, right? Part of the argument I have with her, and you'll probably see this if you ever read the book or some of the chapters in it, like where I would put this argument is, okay, people would make the argument that every theory we have as an MFT field is systemic. And I say, no, it's not. And they'll say, yeah, of course it is. And I was like, actually, no. If you go and read Maps of Narrative Practice, in the first chapter, Michael White says, we reject the idea of the family as a system. We don't think that is how we should be theoretically grounded, right? And so I think that we have to be very clear about what we are, how we are defining systems, because in the past we have. And often what we do, because we're family therapists, we want to bring everybody together, we love to highlight how everything works, how postmodernism and attachment and family systems theory are all in harmony and Shangri-La and work great together. But that doesn't help us at all. Really, growth comes out of conflict. And we need to start being clear about how these theories differ and how that leads to different types of diagnoses, which sets up the possibilities of interventions. To me, that's what we're trying to actually do, right? In my mind, I see the postmodern critique, attachment theory, and family systems theory as probably the three main theoretical drivers of our field as currently constituted. And a lot of times, even doctoral students can't articulate the differences between those. And to me, that's really problematic because if we can't do that, then all we're going to do is really default to our model. We're going to say, okay, I don't really know. I think systemically, so things are connected. So now I'm going to do narrative therapy, or now I'm going to do EFT. And to me, that really misses out on an opportunity to, instead of just saying, oh, hey, this is what I do, to say, this is how I think, this is how I predict and explain what's going on. And so I can really frame that for this couple, family, individual I'm working with, and then move on to intervention. But the theory you're basing that on is going to be a driver of that, whether it's implicit or explicit. So making sure we know theory and the disagreements between them, maybe the places of overlap, but how they are incompatible can really help us have a greater expertise in that.
Yeah, and we will definitely have you and Becky back when that book is done. But speaking of books, if you are interested in more of what Jacob has been talking about today, you can go to his book from Routledge, Systemic Diagnosis, The Application of Family Systems Theory. You told us about the EPIC mnemonic. What else in that book, in addition to the EPIC assessment, are you proud about and excited about and what a reader would get?
Yeah, what I really tried to do with this book was to make it really accessible, right? To make it, to not only provide a framework, but I have examples of stuff that you can ask questions. I try to do a lot in terms of dialogue to see how you would pull out some of these ideas from a conversation and talk about how the skills and abilities you need to make a diagnosis is to be able to elicit the information from the system that's in front of you. So asking good questions, what does it mean to ask a good question or a systemic question, as I would call it? And what does it mean when the system is resistant? And so my goal in this was really to try to bridge that gap between theory and intervention by really trying to create some skills that can help students or practitioners make diagnoses, feel solid in their ability to make those diagnoses, so they have more options for intervention.
The book works for someone in a training institute or a young therapist getting their systemic footing, but I think it could also be applicable for more seasoned clinicians too, or when you are collaborating with other mental health professionals or physicians, as we've been talking about today. People always like to continue the conversation, Jacob. It's been great. If people want to follow up with you, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way is to send me an email, jacob-b-priest@uiowa.edu. I am not on social media, so you won't find me there. But yeah, love to chat via email. Yeah, it's the best way to get a hold of me.
Eli, back with you, bringing to a close another informative installment of the AAMFT podcast. Did you know that AAMFT is active on all your favorite social media channels? Be sure to follow us, the AAMFT, on Instagram, X, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the world of AAMFT, you can always find the back installments of the podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcast. I am partial to Apple Podcast and Spotify, but it's on Google Play, Stitcher. So please, if you're new to us, check out back installments where we tackle the latest trends and events impacting the world of systemic therapy, like today. And I have a number of pioneer interviews, which is some of my favorite interviews to conduct over the years. You can drop me a line at
ELIKARAM.com, where you see everything going on in my world, including two books that are out. One for our young professionals, Marriage and Family Therapy, a National Exam, Your Guide for Success. That's from Springer. And that will prepare you for the national exam, including 360 practice questions, a full-length mock exam, proven strategies and tips for test taking, and it's organized to match the domains of the licensure exam. And then, if you're interested in these common factors that we always talk about on the show, including what makes a motivated client, how you build, nurture, and repair a therapeutic alliance, how you maximize your own therapist factors. You want to check out my book, Bringing Common Factors to Life in Couple and Family Therapy from Rutledge. As always, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, my friends, stay safe, stay systemic.
Stay systemic, my friend.
It's up to me, Linus.
Hear the latest debate with our guests and topics we love.